30 for 30 podcasts are brought to you by OnStar. Being safe on the road is important, and no conversation about safety out on the road is complete without OnStar. For over two decades, OnStar has been giving their members peace of mind behind the wheel. Now, no one likes to think about getting in a crash, but it happens more than we care to admit. If it happens in an OnStar-equipped vehicle, you have people looking out for you. With automatic crash response, special sensors can alert OnStar advisors of an impact. They can connect to your vehicle, take stock of the situation, and get you the help you need, even if you can't ask for it yourself. And with OnStar, you have real humans ready to help, specially trained advisors on call 24/7. Because when the unexpected happens out on the road, the last thing you want is to be alone. OnStar, be safe out there. OnStar is available on Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, and Cadillac. Automatic crash response requires OnStar plan, working electrical system, cell reception, and GPS signal. OnStar links to emergency services. Limitations apply. Visit OnStar.com for details. Hello and welcome to the 30 for 30 podcast. My name is Jody Avergan. Our special summer series continues, marking the 10th anniversary of the 30 for 30 film series. Today, the last in our first run of episodes, we'll be back again in August with a few more ahead of our next season of original podcasts. But today, we're looking at a story that continues to haunt the city of Chicago.
Go Captain, number 25, Ben Wilson.
Ben Wilson is part of Chicago's Mount Rushmore when it comes to basketball.
In 1984, Benjamin Wilson was regarded as the top high school basketball player in the country. He had recently led his team at Simeon Career Academy to a state championship, and his athleticism caught the eye of scouts around the country.
Handled the ball like he's Isaiah Thomas, had a smile like Magic Johnson.
You know, he had everything you could have to be a superstar.
Benji, as his friends and family called him, seemed destined for greatness, but on November 20th, 1984, his promising career came to an abrupt end.
Somebody runs down the street and says, "Man, your boy got a shot." I said, "My boy who?" He said, "Ben Wilson."
Wilson was shot in broad daylight just down the street from his high school and died from his wounds at the hospital hours later. Police later apprehended Billy Moore, 16 years old, and Omar Dixon, 15, and charged them with Wilson's murder as well as attempted robbery. Wilson's death hit the city hard. It was a symbolic loss for a city racked by the high costs of drugs and gang violence.
He does represent a dream unfulfilled, you know, and that's a hard pill to swallow.
In 2012, directors Kudi and Chike captured his story in the 30 for 30 Benji. We invited them to our studio to discuss the impact of the film, which also included the first ever interview with Benji's killer, Billy Moore. Later in this episode, we're going to hear from Billy Moore himself, who came by our studios to discuss his decision to participate in the film and the work he's doing today. We'll also be joined by former Education Secretary Arnie Duncan, who grew up in Chicago, played basketball against Benji Wilson, and in recent years has been working with Billy Moore on issues of gun violence. But for now, the directors of Benji, Kudi, and Chike, welcome to the 30 for 30 podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Kudi, you're from Chicago. Mm-hmm. Was this a story that you knew growing up? And is that kind of how you guys found out about this story and decided to tell it?
Yes, sir. I was born and raised in Chicago. And I remember, like, when this happened, I was in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. So I remember before he, you know, got shot and killed, Ben Wilson, you know, it was a real big deal when Ben Wilson was playing any team. You know, he was like the, you know, of course, the best player in the nation. And it was exciting to see.
He was the best high school player I ever saw.
He could do everything that the pro players do.
He had a finger roll.
Wilson slides down the lane.
He had a jump shot.
First shot, right down by Ben Wilson.
Made it look so easy and graceful.
There was a kind of a smoothness about him.
Sweet and smooth.
Like, you used to try to go to the court and catch him play.
Oh, yeah, all the time. We would go And I never got to see him play, though. Never got to see him. Besides when he played in the state championship, which he didn't do good that game. So I was like, Ben ain't all that good. But how everybody say, but he got even better that summer. And it just everybody just kept talking about him. And Ben Wilson. So we really was hoping for Ben to be the next big thing.
So, Chike, you're from New Orleans. Yeah. Did you find out about
Through Creed. I didn't know about him. And it's funny because I played basketball growing up. Like, I had those typical pipe dreams of playing in the NBA one day. But Benji's was a story that I hadn't heard about until Cootie told me. And then I was like, dang, how do I not know about this story? You know what I'm saying? So I was even more intrigued about it. But I could relate to the concept of having a – like, we had – everybody, I think, has their player. You know what I'm saying?
We had local legend.
We had Randy Livingston, who was number one in the nation, I think, going to it. So I could only imagine hearing that story happen to, like, Randy. And Benji is like Randy, but, like, a whole other – level as far as at that time period what was going on in Chicago period too.
And this is such a Chicago story, and I want to talk a little bit about 1984
in Chicago was equivalent to pretty much like 88 was in hip-hop. It was the beginning of the golden era.
Michael Jordan has just been drafted.
Chicago selects Michael Jordan.
I'm looking forward to trying to live up to everyone else's expectations.
Jesse Jackson, huge figure.
T-Bone, move it on up. Thank you very much.
So can you just talk about trying to capture that larger era in Chicago?
Yeah, no, that was a magical time because we had the first black mayor, Mayor Harold Washington. Like you said, Jesse Jackson running for president. That was amazing. You know, like, oh, we're going to have a black president possibly, you know, which later on we had a black president from Chicago.
Crazy.
You know, that was, well, he wasn't born in Chicago, but he was raised in Chicago.
Why does Ben Wilson fit in this story?
Then Ben was number one, the first to give Illinois number one.
He was the number one player in the country.
My Ben Wilson, my little brother.
I do what it takes to be successful.
This was going to be our, you know, quote unquote, little messiah. He going to take us to the promised land.
So it was a really good time. That's why it was such a tragedy when he passed.
Cootie, you grew up in Chicago, as you said, and you remember watching Benji play. Can you remember the moment you found out that he had been shot?
Yeah, and that was the reason why when you watch the movie and where we have all of the news footage, that's what I seen real time.
The shooting took place right here at this school store, about a half a block away from Simeon.
Young Wilson, only 17, was gunned down in an attempted robbery.
Of a spur-of-the-moment robbery attempt.
Police have identified the suspect in his murder as members of a street gang.
Two reputed gang members were accused of...
Reported gang members who allegedly attempted to rob Wilson after a scuffle.
And the way you felt watching the doc is the way I felt, but it's real time, and I'm like in eighth grade. And then when that happened, I remember hearing about it, and it was like a peace that came over Chicago afterwards. You know what I mean? It was like, I can go anywhere because everybody was just like in shock more than anything, you know, because Chicago really like a real segregated city from all sides, from, you know, black and white, from race to gangs, you know, in Chicago. So my neighborhood is a gangster disciple gang. Then I couldn't go in this neighborhood as a black Peystone Ranger gang. But after Ben died, it felt like it was, you know, it was a truce.
After he's shot and he dies, I mean, the funeral scene is just so remarkable. I mean, thousands of people coming out.
It was like going to a ball game. You know, you didn't even have time to get sentimental or, you know, think about him because it was a circus.
Oakwood Cemetery closes at 4:30. They kept it open later because the crowds that were already in the cemetery. We're talking about blocks of people.
Yea, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we'll fear no evil, for thou art with us. This is our prayer.
Was that outpouring about Benji himself, or was there just some larger moment of grief because of the level of violence in Chicago in general?
I think it was some of both. You know what I mean? Definitely Ben, you know, it was that, and it was definitely the fact of all the shooting and killings that was going on. Ben was the 669th murder that year.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and that and it was time, it was like, it's time to stop. It's the time for a change, and Ben was the, you know, perfect candidate, I guess, for God to help with that change, you know. So everything happened for a reason.
Do you think Benji's story has had at all an impact over the course of, you know, decades on gun violence in general in Chicago?
I think it pretty much went down because, you know, the murder rate after Ben died went down tremendously into the 90s. That was because in Chicago, if somebody got shot and killed when Ben died, they had to take the person to the nearest hospital, yeah. not the nearest trauma center where you can get treatment. So Ben really died in the hospital 3 hours on the gurney. So, you know, now after his death, they made a law that you had to take the person to a trauma unit when they got shot. That saved so many lives. And people thought before they really did certain things, but kids in Chicago still killing. They don't even understand the ramifications of that. So it's an epidemic.
Yeah. To me, it's like it's all Band-Aid change. It's Band-Aid under a miserably bleeding wound that, like, it's going to stop the wound from bleeding for a split second, but then it's like it's not. It's only going to hold for so long. And it's like it's not until we really, like, stitch these things up and properly, it's like we almost have to personify, like, America, and it has to deal with itself just as we expect somebody else to deal with its trauma as an individual and peel back those layers. Like, if you're going for therapy as a country, we need that. We got to pull back those dark layers, and then until we do that, we're just continuing to put Band-Aids on things. Yeah. Little policies here and there, they're just Band-Aids.
Coming up, Billy Moore, the man who shot Ben Wilson when he was just a teenager. We will hear about his journey since his release from prison and the advocacy work he is doing in Chicago today.
Should I start from the beginning? And let me say this too. This is the first time that I'm officially telling this story of what actually took place the day that I, committed the crime that I committed that sent me to the penitentiary.
30 for 30 podcast is brought to you by Delta Airlines. Delta flies to 300 cities around the world. That's 300 cities where everyone does the same things you do. That's 300 cities where the people in those 300 cities think they're the only ones who know about that one place. 300 cities where people miss someone in one of the other 299 cities. 300 cities where people sing in the car or in the shower or both, poorly. Delta isn't flying to 300 cities merely to bring us together, but to show us we're not that far apart in the first place. Delta, keep climbing. 30 for 30 podcasts are brought to you by State Farm. Whether in the game of basketball or in life, having an MVP on your side makes all the difference. In basketball, a multi-talented elite playmaker who can be called upon in crunch time not only helps the team succeed, but makes the players around them better. In life, your State Farm agent strives to be your MVP, ready to come through in the clutch when you need it the most. Whether it's buying a new home, coping with a car accident, or building the foundation for your future, you can feel confident knowing you don't have to go it alone. With a State Farm agent on your team, you'll be well prepared for whatever life brings your way. State Farm, here to help life go right. Billy Moore, who is Benji's killer, is featured in the film, and I was just curious if you could talk a little bit about how you connected with him.
Definitely, Cootie. You know, to this day, I just remember watching him on the phone. I won't forget because I can't. It was over several scene like conversations that they had, but I remember one in particular, like Cootie's in the distance, kind of pacing and talking, and I'm just sitting there like, man, I wonder what they're talking about. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just not like. Cootie wants to have that conversation, mm-hmm. confident that he can have that conversation.
Yeah. Can you tell us what you were saying on that phone call?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I told Billy, I'm like, you know, I'm from Chicago. I'm from the hood of Chicago. So I relate so much to Billy because we used to have guns. You know, thank God I never shot anybody or got shot. You know what I mean? So, you know, going through all the situations that I went through and I was explaining to him all the things that I've seen and went through, he felt comfortable with me and Chike telling his stories.
Was it at all a hard decision for you? Did you ever think of not including Billy?
No, we wanted Billy. We wanted Omar.
Omar, too.
Yeah, we was trying to get Omar, and but he went back to jail.
Did you hear from anyone who was upset with the film?
No, not with the film at all. The only thing we heard would have been from people that just didn't care for us having him tell his side like that. And Billy, I mean, he was one, but then they totally, like, as soon as they were able to come to peace more forgiveness than they were able to see the film in the light and the real reason why it was important that he be able to have his piece in there.
All of a sudden, I just get shoved out of the way. And it was with a lot of force. He kept walking. Him and his girlfriend, they were arguing. You know, so I said, hey, man, ain't you gonna say excuse me? And he stopped and turned around. He said, man, fuck you. I don't owe you no excuse. Who is you? I'm like, nah, fuck you. And she like, and this is when I hear his name. Come on, Ben, let's go. Let's go, Ben. You know, and she grabbed him. I say, man, don't walk up on me. So I step back and unzip my jacket. So I'm figuring, you know, he see this gun, he gonna leave. And his girlfriend just goes hysterical when she see the gun, you know. And he like, oh, you got a gun? What you gonna do, shoot me now? And I'm like, I take two steps backwards and he lunges towards me. I pulls the gun out and shot him twice.
And so we should sort of clarify this because I think it's, you go into it and you try and you do a lot of work to lay it out in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Omar and Billy are taken into custody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's no dispute that Billy shot Benji, right?
Yeah, no dispute.
But the question is that overnight after they were interrogated,
mm-hmm.
the story sort of shifts a little bit from it was just a encounter mm-hmm. to they were trying to rob him.
Trying to rob him.
Why exactly. does that distinction matter? Why did it matter to you to talk about that in the film?
I mean, well, it would have been more defense mm-hmm. for his attorney if it would have just right. been him shooting them, you know. But they had to put a robbery on that to make it a murder and a robbery. And they used Omar, who was 14 at the time, 14 or 15 at the time, as the scapegoat to, oh, he tried to rob him. He said shoot him. He had nothing to do with it, but they put it on him, and which didn't ever happen.
It really tore down Omar. I think Billy probably would have gone through what he gone through, and I think because he still made a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
So it amplified Omar's situation more. And I still wish Jatan would have talked to us because she was there to get her perspective.
And so
on
that's
things.
Benji's high school girlfriend. Yeah. And we learn at the end that you made requests and she didn't participate.
Yeah. So that's one, because I feel like the way we direct things, we don't like to take like a harsh point of view. We just collectively like to gather all the information, and where that leads based upon what we have, that's where it leads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so she could have been a part of that process to help it lead to where right. it needed to lead to based on her truth.
You can take this however you want, but what do you feel like the impact has been of putting this film out into the world?
Oh, man. I mean, for everybody to, it was like a closure for people to actually hear what happened, because there were so many rumors.
Yeah.
But then, too, you got redemption, definitely, because of Billy. I mean, well, Billy went through it after his death. Of course, he was the most hated person in Chicago at the time. And then he went on to, you know, do the Benji documentary. He was brave enough to do that. Went and met some of Benji's best friends, was brave enough to do that. They got together and they've been going around the school speaking to kids and telling their story, you know, because they know that it's bigger than what that was. And they were kids at the time, you know, and Billy was a kid that just made a mistake. And Billy said if he could have just reached out and grabbed that bullet after he shot it, how bad he wish he could have done that. But after you do something, that's like, you know, that's the thing we want to show the kids. Like, when you make a choice, you know, you got to live with it. Yeah. So Billy is really doing his thing.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think any of that would have happened without this film for Billy?
No, nothing would have happened. I think Billy, and he thank us every day for everything that's happening, because, you know, it was closure for him. You know, he needed disclosure,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then other than that, he would have been hiding.
Yeah,
you know, he'd have been hiding in Chicago. He didn't want nobody to really know who he was, you know, of course. And ain't no telling what would have happened, but he got to tell his story and people forgave him.
Man, when they broke in and said that brother had died, That was the worst feeling of my life. And I couldn't come to terms with the fact that I was responsible for a human being dead. I apologize to Ms. Wilson and Mr. Wilson. That wasn't my intention.
And now we'll hear from Billy Moore. Billy spent about 20 years incarcerated as part of a 40-year sentence for the killing of Ben Wilson. Since his release in 2004, he has worked as an activist to reduce recidivism rates and the cycle of violence in Chicago. It can be heartbreaking work. Billy's own son was shot and murdered in 2017. He currently works for a nonprofit, Iman, an organization that pairs older men who have served time with younger men who are considered at risk. Moore is a life coach and a case manager. And his reconciliation of his own continues. It wasn't until 2018 that he finally had a chance to meet and have a conversation and a reconciliation with Ben Wilson's brothers. It's taken that long. Moore has teamed up with former Secretary of Education and fellow Chicago native Arne Duncan to continue the fight against gun violence in their city. I recently spoke to both men about their personal connections to Ben Wilson and their work together. Billy Moore, welcome to the 30 for 30 podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Mr. Duncan, Arne Duncan, thank you as well. You're on the phone from Chicago, but thanks for making the time.
Thanks for the opportunity.
So, Billy, can you just talk a little bit about your decision almost 10 years ago now to participate in this film? Do you remember what it was like when it first came out?
Yeah, I was a little nervous because I didn't know how people was going to receive this. I knew that it was still relevant because, you know, in Chicago, before the film came out, it could be a kid that get killed. That happened to be, you know, a young athlete, and somebody would bring up Benji. It never failed, like year after year after year.
So he was still, his memory was still alive. He was still part of the conversation. Yeah.
Benji was definitely an important figure in Chicago's history. So I always had to be reminded of my crime. Keep this in mind. I had been out almost 9 years.
Yeah.
I had done my time. I had been working. I was working for another non-for-profit organization that helped returning citizens find jobs. Up until that time, I had helped like 1,500 men not go back to prison and find employment. You know, I had been basically flying under the radar. I had a large amount of anonymity. The only people that knew me was the people that knew me. But now I can walk down the street and people like, man, that's Billy Moore. You know, basically because of the 30 for 30.
But when they say that's Billy Moore, what are they thinking?
I was in Walgreens one day. A Chicago police officer walked up to me. He said, man, he didn't say nothing, but hey, man, I know you was telling the truth. I can feel it in my heart, and I'm proud of you. I want to shake your hand for having the courage to tell your truth. I've had a lot of, you know, situations where that happened. And I'm going to tell you another thing. When it was brought to me that some guys were planning on doing this 30 for 30 and that they wanted to do it with me, you know, participating, those were the only guys that ever asked me for my story.
Arne Duncan, where do you enter this story? Is it after the film comes out and you start to work with Billy? Or I think there's a deeper connection here, too, in terms of your roots in Chicago and Chicago basketball, right?
Yeah, it's one of the most remarkable stories of my life. And so I grew up playing some with Benji. I'm actually at the very start of that 30 for 30. There's a scene at the very start of the movie of people playing in the YBI tournament, and that was me.
On the court with Benji.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And I remember where I was in my dorm room in college when I got the call that he'd been killed. I was 2 years older than him. It was, you know, beyond devastating. So I didn't know Billy, but, you know, I watched 30 for 30, and to be honest, I couldn't even really watch the interview with him at the end of it. It was too painful. I had too much anger. And then a couple years ago, and it's just pretty symbolic, I met Billy on a peace march in his old neighborhood.
I mean, did you have that anger inside you still, even all those years later?
No question. That was unresolved, to say the least. And we walked and we talked, and it was one of those sort of transformative moments. And I didn't just get his side of the story. I got a real sense for his heart and his commitment and his remorse and his desire to make a difference and to help others. And we're fortunate to work with a number of fantastic partners in the city now in reducing gun violence. And Iman is an extraordinary partner for us in the southwest side of Chicago. We started in 2016, which was a year of, unfortunately, very significant violence. We've seen a 40% reduction in shootings, a 23% reduction in homicides. So things are getting better, but we have a long, long way to go. And what I say all the time is that our men are the solution. They are not the problem.
Arnie talked about, you know, the peace march. You know, I work for a tremendous organization, Iman, that's really dedicated to helping these young men who are most at risk of being shot or shooting somebody. I had to, you know, deal with my own loss, my own son getting killed. And I understood the type of resentment that, you know, was felt for me. So it was critical for me to be able to stand up in front of these young men every day and try to give them a reason to be better when, you know, I'm now faced also with dealing with the loss of my son and understanding that the young men who, you know, may be responsible for that is just caught up in the same type of cycle of ignorance that I was caught up in.
And what Billy said is that if the young man who killed his son came into his program, he would mentor him. He would support him. And that just, you can't ask for redemption if you can't give it. You can't ask for forgiveness if you can't give it. And that blew me away. And I have two teenage, a daughter and a son, and I can't begin to say I would have that kind of heart or humanity if something happened to one of my kids. And then in November, one of the most remarkable evenings of my life, with 34 years to the day from the murder of Benji, Billy and Benji's brothers spent 4 hours together, and at the end of it had this unbelievable reconciliation.
Billy, talk a little bit about meeting Benji's family. Was that the first time you'd really had a conversation with his closest family members?
Yeah, this was the first time, ever seeing these guys in person. It's so much historical context to this. So I had a full understanding of how they felt about me. You know, Chicago is big, but it's small. You know, it's a lot of people connected. So, you know, just the streets let you know, who for you and who not for you. And I definitely knew that for a long time, those brothers was very hurt and was having a hard time of healing from the pain of losing their brother. And I didn't understand what I put Benji's family through fully until my own son was killed. So I understood what I had done. And that's not right. Like, you can't snatch people away from people and expect that to be okay. You can just, you know, pack it up and live your life. And no, that it took 34 years for me and Benji's brothers to come together. And those guys were still in tears about the loss of their brother. I felt their pain. Their pain was the same pain that I was feeling in that room that night. But the difference between me and probably them, and I'm sure they wouldn't mind me speaking in these terms, is that because of what I went through, I was able to kind of have a more openness to forgive. And not because the young man who killed my son is seeking forgiveness, but I understand the state of ignorance that is causing our young men to commit these crimes.
And is that where the mentorship comes in?
No doubt. You know, understanding how, you know, generally young men just respond. They don't think. So we can get you to just slow down and think about what's important. You think about your value system. You think about what you are waging if you take a certain type of action to whatever it was to cause you to feel a certain type of way, and what's that's going to lead, what type of consequences. And then the other, you know, situation is that you really can't control how other people respond or think. You can only control yourself. So if you take the right appropriate responses, then sometimes the conflicts can be resolved, because you can also think for the other person. You know, Benji pushed me or whatever, I could easily just let it go, you know. But as young men, not having that real sense of what it means to sometimes step back, we don't know that that's okay. You know, learning from people's mistakes, you know, that's the true wisdom. I just want to see these young men have a better sense of purpose and value for life.
Billy Moore is a case manager with the Inter-Muslim Action Network. Arnie Duncan is former Secretary of Education under Barack Obama and is now managing partner of Chicago Cred. Earlier in the episode, we heard from Kudi and Chike, directors of Benji. And here's one final word from them real quick. We've been asking all of our directors about their favorite 30 for 30 films other than the ones that they directed. So take a quick listen.
The Two Escobars was like, I remember when I first saw that, I was blown away. I was like, oh, this is crazy. Like, it just, to me, I mean, I had never really been like, I like docs, I like watching docs, but that as a story, it felt like even when I think about it now, it's like I have to remember if it was even a movie or a doc. It just felt like a movie. You know what I'm saying?
So I was inspired by what Ice Cube did with Straight Out of L.A. Ice Cube did his thing with that, Straight Out of L.A.
That's about the Raiders and N.W.A. and just kind of that whole.
Raiders and W. Yep. But I want to definitely get a shout out to our producers, Ted Schillinger and Amani Martin, who ESPN put that gave us that relationship with those guys. They really did a great job with our film, but also with the film that they did for ESPN, which was
Silly Games, I think.
Silly Little Games. That was a really good one.
Yeah.
So, that's one I could say that was inspiring as well.
That brings us to the end of this first batch of anniversary shows. A couple things on the horizon. Next week, there's an episode about the latest big 30 for 30 film on Kobayashi versus Chestnut, the greatest rivalry in hot dog eating. We will then pick up the anniversary series in early August, heading right into our next season of original stories. Can't tell you exactly what it is right now, but it's a 5-part series. It's about Los Angeles and basketball and scandal. It's a good one. We'll be announcing the details real soon, I promise. A reminder that every 30 for 30 film is available on our streaming service, ESPN Plus. You can sign up for that right through the ESPN app or by clicking on the link in the show notes. And all of our podcast documentaries are available for free at 30for30podcast.com or in this feed that you're listening to right now. The anniversary series was produced by Nina Ernest and Ryan Nantel, with help from Mitra Kaboli, Vin D'Anton, Catherine Sankey, Aaron Leiden, Jennifer Thorpe, Jenna Anthony, Deirdre Fenton, Brian D'Astilio, Eve Wolf, Samantha Dowd, and Jeff Arias. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with more 30 for 30.